Second hour of 3D on this Wednesday morning. Darren, Derek, and Donick with you. Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated, the author of The Media Circus, coming up. Tim Hasselback to kick off the third hour of 3D, our weekly segments with him. And then Lee Jenkins. Get into a little NBA stuff with Lee Jenkins. NBA draft tomorrow night. We'll have Lee join us in the fourth and final hour of the program. We say hello to Richard Deitch. Richard, how you doing?
What's up, guys?
How you doing? What's new and exciting?
That's quite a introduction. Nothing really feels that new and exciting for me today, to be very blunt. It just feels like another one. So.
Oh, man. I thought you were
excited to be with you guys, though. I mean, when you have young kids and you don't sleep, like, to be very honest with you, just getting out of the house at a certain time feels like an accomplishment. So, pretty much how I feel today.
Oh, okay. I asked for that. That was good. Let me start with this bizarre story, and I just want to get your take on it, and we'll probably discuss this a little bit more at length later in the show. So you've got this guy who has season tickets to the Bears and the Packers. And I guess through, you know, however, being a season ticket holder for the Bears, he somehow was able to get a pass where a pregame deal where he's going to get to go down on the field before the Bears-Packers game. He shows up to that wearing all Packers stuff. He's got beads and a jersey and everything. And remember, he's doing this as a Bears season ticket holder. That's how he got the access to go down for the pregame. Well, the Bears people tell him, sorry, you're not going down on the field dressed like that. He is suing the Bears, not for financial gain, but suing them to, I guess, reverse their policy and allow anybody to take part in an on-field experience at Soldier Field. Well, what's your take without me weighing in on this? What's your take just hearing that? Just your first thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think teams, as a general rule, kind of get ridiculous in terms of, you know, what fans can wear, what they can't wear, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All that said, and again, you'd have to find a lawyer who would know better, and Nashville certainly has its share of lawyers. But my sense is that because they're a private organization or a private club, they have the right to dictate what someone can or cannot be doing on their field. So it feels like legally they have the right to do that. And, you know, the other thing, too, is it's not necessarily, I shouldn't phrase it as a negative. It is good PR for them to sort of make this statement, because you're letting the larger fan base know that, you know, you're standing by those who root for this particular team, and, you know, you're not going to show any on-field love for the other team. But, you know, it's a larger, interesting question that gets into sort of just beyond this seemingly silly story, is kind of like what are fans allowed to do in an arena when it comes to bringing signs in, when it comes to wearing stuff? Like, how far can and should ownership go in censoring that? Like, for example, and I'm honestly not saying this is right or wrong, but like, if I go to an arena and I wear a shirt that has a curse word in a foreign language on that shirt, Should some security guy come over and tell me to leave his arena or not? If I have a sign like that, I come to the Redskins field, which says Dan Snyder's a horrible owner, I don't curse or anything, I just say, you know, like, is someone going to pull that sign down? The answer is probably yes. And then if so, do they have like a legal right to do that? That's always interesting to me, is sort of, how far can ownership sort of go in some of this kind of stuff? And then maybe, and this is where I guess if you read the back of your ticket, maybe ownership has the right to do anything they want once you step into their facility.
I kind of feel like you live in a bad neighborhood. There's always sirens going on during our weekly chat with you. Is that a bad assumption?
Yeah, this is you got to keep in
New
mind.
York.
I live in like what, a 6 mile square area with 10 million people. There's a lot going on, so inevitably you're gonna get buses and sirens and stuff. But yeah, I seem to have a bad habit with you guys. There's always like a siren going on in the background. The other thing too is, I don't know if Nashville's like this, but once the weather turns really hot in New York, Like, it's a whole second level of crazy. and so there's always something going on in the, you know, that's, I don't know who sang the song. It was the Rascal Flatts. Well, that famous song about, like, sort of hot times, summer in the city, back of my neck feeling dirty and gritty. Like, that is, like, the quintessential New York song where just, like, kind of craziness goes on when you have 10 million people baking in a very small place.
You know, to your point, going back to the original discussion, that was going on here. I'm sure you've read the articles that were put out there that NBC reps were walking around and offering fans who had signs, derogatory signs about Mike Milbury during the Stanley Cup final, offering them, let's say, gifts to take
a hat or a shirt,
you know,
or something like that.
Silly, yeah, an NBC hat or shirt really wasn't a very good gift, to take their sign away. And, of course, they were declined on every offer. People were like, go, you know, beat it. This is, I have the right to do this. It brings up a question of, you know, how, what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. I don't know if that falls under the same umbrella what I brought up, but it kind of feels the same.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, the interesting thing, too, in that discussion is that culturally, what might be acceptable in Nashville might not be acceptable in Louisville, might not be acceptable in Des Moines, which may be acceptable in New York or Los Angeles. So a lot of that, too, I think probably has to do with what part of the country you're in. NBC, though, they're just asking for that story to get out there and to be sort of, you know, shamed in that. You put on a provocative broadcaster. You are essentially paying him, in my opinion, to be provocative. I'm not a Mike Milbury fan at all. I think kind of like his stuff is just like from like bad Don Cherry to me. And so if people react to that, as they should, the idea that you're going to go through this, you pay some helpless intern to go through the stands, you know, offering an NBC Sports hat so that people aren't chanting F Mike Milbury is just silly. If you put a provocateur on the air, you have to understand that there are going to be fans who react to said provocateur, and if they are in, you know, the arena with this person, they're going to chant that. Obviously, nobody wants anybody to approach Mike Milbury and do anything physically, but I think every fan has a right to chant and say whatever they want, particularly if you're paying this guy to give provocative opinions.
We're talking with Richard Deitch, SI.com. Now, Richard, we've talked several times about the NBA, and I keep bringing it up to you because it's fascinating to me. And what I want to ask you is it good in a sense that, and you might see it different, that one guy has the NBA held hostage in regards to trades being offered, where guys want to go? It seems as if everyone essentially is waiting on what LeBron James is going to do and then sort of make moves, or they're making moves before he chooses to either stay in Cleveland or go elsewhere to try to either A, eventually end up with him, or B, to beat him. And I know I've asked this question before, and you say, hey, super teams are great because it makes it entertaining. You know, you get to watch your favorite players all on one channel at one time. But one guy having so much, to me, pull on what's going on from a maneuvering standpoint with other players is crazy.
By the way, this was Derek's audition tape for FS1. So congratulations.
That was my next question.
Man, taking a shot at my man, LeBron James.
No, I love LeBron. No, I am a huge LeBron fan.
I understand where you're coming from. Yeah, here's my answer to you. One, Derek, I would say someone did beat him. Mm-hmm. So the premise might be flawed to start with, because the Cavs didn't win this year. The Golden State Warriors won. Now, you make the argument maybe everybody's trying to chase the Warriors and figure it out. But I cannot hold LeBron James or be critical of this, because his talent has dictated what this system is. You just happen to have a guy, and maybe Durant is coming close to catching him, or I'm sure some believe past him. But you have such an outlier in talent where a singular guy in a league can essentially guarantee you, if you have him and you put sort of the right parts around him, you're either getting to the conference finals or the finals, just based on how great he is against the rest of the league. So, I mean, I know where you're coming from, but I just think this is a outlier situation in that he is so gifted and so great and makes people around him so much better that he's the one outlier where if he went to Memphis next year or the Brooklyn Nets or stayed with the Cavs, they're going to be a favorite in whatever, maybe not in the West, but if, you know, he goes to any Eastern Conference team, they would be a favorite. In terms of sort of teams trying to figure it out, man, that's, to me, that's part of the deal. That's why you pay these general managers and analytics people and draft people all this money, is to try to figure out, you know, how can we make the attempt to beat this guy? I just think, Derek, the reality is, until LeBron gets old, and given his body and given how he just sort of like seems to just be a different cat in terms of his ability to withstand injury, I don't think this is going to happen for two or three more years in the East. The larger question to me is, if the Warriors can somehow keep their base intact, who can beat them in the next 4 years? You know, let's even say Iguodala, who's a great, great player, and let's say he's the one guy they can't keep based on money. If they keep those other four guys, I think I've talked about this on your show, there's always going to be great players nearing the end of their career who want to chase a ring, who will play for the Warriors at a discount. So that, to me, would be the more interesting question is, I feel like the league is really, if you want to consider them, quote-unquote, being held hostage, I feel like they're being held hostage by the greatness of the Warriors, and that other than maybe the Spurs, maybe the Cavs, and I'm not even sure I buy that anymore, I don't think there's any other team that can beat them in the next 3 or 4 years if they keep these guys intact.
Yeah, it's just it's crazy because I've never, and I've watched basketball for a long time, and I know the rules were different when Jordan and those guys were playing. The guys were not moving as much. But you just see one guy in the last 10 years. It's just either you want to play with him, which is good, or you're trying to find a way to beat him, which the Golden State Warriors have twice.
Right. Well, here's, I mean, you know, the thing I would say is, like, you know, I mean, it's, you can look deep into the system in the 80s, and yeah, you didn't have, the system was different.
Exactly.
But I would say that part of the reason some of these teams were great was that there were just morons running other franchises. Like, the person who made that Mikhail Parrish trade,
oh, yeah,
was the worst trade in NBA history. So if you give those Celtics two Hall of Famers, they're going to be great forever. I mean, again, it's a little before my time, but why did the Bucks give up Kareem? That doesn't make any sense. To me, he's arguably the greatest player of all time. How could you allow him to get to a Los Angeles team? And then, you know, you look at the Celtics with Bird and the Lakers with Magic. You know, why didn't teams try to figure out a way around that so that those teams didn't end up getting those players? So, like, I know what you're saying, but I feel like at least in the old days, where maybe the system wasn't being held hostage by a singular player, the system was ridiculous because there were a lot of teams that just made, I mean, terrible, terrible deals, not, you know, including that Golden State deal, which, you know, if you're the Celtics, it's probably the greatest deal in basketball history. I'm not sure we'll ever see a trade where you got two Hall of Fame, two top 50 players in a singular trade. I mean, maybe that'll happen again, but that would strike me as that would strike me. And then lastly, and this is where, and again, I'm a huge Jordan fan. He was the greatest player sort of my, you know, teenage year growing up, and he will always be number one for me. But it's not like he stayed with the Bulls his whole career. I mean, people seem to forget he did go to, you know, he did go to Washington for a couple of years, and yeah, they didn't win the championship, but the whole mythology of, you know, Michael would never do this, or Michael would never do that, or Michael never lost in the playoffs, it's like, that stuff's also not true. It took Jordan some time to become Jordan.
It did. Richard Deitch is with us, SI.com, the Media Circus. Richard, I feel like I have a better appreciation for this because with Fox Sports Tennessee, you don't have the rights to do the broadcast after the first round. So we were left to do just post-game coverage. So the locker room, the last couple of rounds of the playoffs, that was me. I was doing what Doris Burke and some of the people you chronicled in one of your latest articles did. And I used to think about sideline reporters and post-game reporters, hey, it's an easy job. You just get the guy, you ask a couple of questions, and you're done. You know, but really the best do put a lot of thought into it, and the questions can make a difference, even though pretty much anybody could ask some easy questions. But I really did find myself trying to scrutinize, how do you make this the best 2 minutes that you're going to have, or not even that, with these particular players?
Yeah, here's what I would say. It's an interesting point you say, Willie, is that the job itself, like, fundamentally is not hard. It's not hard if you sort of have television presence to ask a question after a game, you know, particularly if you don't sort of get nervous on camera. Where it's excruciatingly hard is, can you provide something interesting for the audience behind the banalities and cliches that a lot of questions you know, sort of provide us? Or are you just an over-the-top homer and you're not really interested in any kind of journalism? You're just sort of just part of the team apparatus. And that's where I think Doris Burke is really, really gifted in that. And you may think her questions are too long-winded, but if you listen to her questions, they're open-ended and they're smart, meaning that the person who's answering the questions has to provide you with interesting answers. Like in journalism school, they teach you, like, ask questions that start with how or why. Why do you do that? Because the subject has to answer the question. They have to give you a response, as opposed to if you answered a question like, you know, do you like blank? Well, that sets up the subject to just say either yes or no. And so a lot of times that's Doris Burke and the best people who do this, that's sort of their gift, is that they're able to ask open-ended, really smart questions that elicit interesting answers from their subjects. And in Doris Burke's case, in the trophy presentation, as you know, Willie, that is just a tough assignment. You are on a stage. The whole arena can hear you. There's 30 million people at home watching you. There's chaos all around you. There's people celebrating. And you got to ask seven different people, you know, maybe 13, 14 questions. So you got to come up with different stuff for each of those individuals. And I thought that after the Game 5 of the NBA Finals, she just hit it out of the park, including getting some really interesting stuff from Draymond Green, which, again, that ceremony is not – we have seen it before, whether it's, you know, Aaron Andrews, no offense to her, or some others who, quite frankly – really just do not provide you much or did not provide you much in terms of getting stuff from players. And that's where you see whether it's Tafoya or Doris Burke. I feel like Rinaldi's good at this. Obviously, Ernie Johnson is solid at this. Listen to what the subject says off the questions, and you as a viewer often learn something. And that, to me, is the deciding factor. Like, if I learn something from an athlete or coach or owner from a trophy presentation, that means the questioner did a great job.
That's a great point. And when you do three interviews, you have to find different questions for the three people, which is not easy. You can find yourself asking the same three questions to the same three people,
right?
And you get the same three answers, but you want to cover more ground than that. That's a great
right.
point.
Talk about how you feel about winning a championship. Well,
yeah.
Gee, I feel fantastic. What an incredible – I mean, you know, instead of like, you know, why – you know, why were you guys able to hold off Team X in the last 2 minutes? Like, that, you know, there's a big difference. You'll get something from the latter question. The first question is just, you know, I love these guys. It's great. I'm happy to be here. The Azaleas are beautiful. It's the Masters, blah, 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 blah.
All right. Derek's dying to ask about the future of Ray Lewis.
Hold on. Let's the FDNY go past.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
No, you alluded to it. You said I was doing my audition for FS1. FS1 has announced that.
Well,
you're
halfway there, Derek, based exactly. on that LeBron drafting.
FSU asked, they've announced that Ray Lewis will be added to their long list
their roster.
Of rosters, people
right.
on their rosters. Does that bring anything to FS1?
Yeah, I mean, it gives them a great linebacker.
Yeah,
and a
besides a great,
I mean,
yeah.
no, I mean, this is not to knock Ray Lewis, but, mm-hmm. you know, he's a fine, generic analyst who's super famous. And as you know, Derek, you played in the NFL. If you are super famous, there is value for a television network in that everyone will recognize who Ray Lewis is, one of mm-hmm. the great defensive players of all time. So it's a good person to put on a press release, and it's a good name that you can promote. But as we saw at ESPN, you know, Ray had a lot of reps at ESPN. And as a general rule, he didn't really how do I sort of phrase it?
He didn't get better.
He wasn't a difference maker. It's not like I don't think he sort of worked at it, or it's not like I think he was mailing it in. I just don't particularly think he said so many interesting things to reviewers, which was ironic because you would have tagged him prior to his hire as this firebrand, like inspirational type of talker who could be a really interesting television presence. This is independent of whether you think Ray Lewis did or did not commit a crime in Atlanta. Let's just like sort of forget about that for a second if we can. I'm talking about as a broadcaster, you would have thought that this guy would have been really, really interesting just given in his NFL film stuff, you know, the guy's like, he really is like a motivational, inspirational speaker. But whatever it is, it didn't necessarily translate to ESPN. He now goes to Fox, where he's going to be asked to be more of an opinionist, and we'll see. Maybe that's a better fit for Ray Lewis than a traditional broadcaster. But Derek, if you had to ask me, like, does he make a difference? No, I don't think so. But, you know, if you're Ray, you're in Los Angeles, you're cashing a nice check from Fox, and it's not very hard, in all honesty, to, like, you know, debate the topic of the day with Colin Cowherd or whoever else floats through these shows. So, you know, if you're Ray, you take the money. But honestly, no, I don't see him as a guy who, in my opinion, is like viewing, must viewing. Like, he's not, Ray Lewis is, this is, again, I'm just going to speak for me, Ray Lewis will never be a person who makes me want to change the channel to hear what he has to say. And that is surprising, because I might have bet 3 years ago he would have been that person.
I'll remember next week not to ask you what's new and exciting, because I think you kind of broke out into your Louis C.K. bet just a little bit.
I gave you a little bit of sort of New York angst today. I was trying to ratchet it up.
Appreciate it as always. Have a great rest of your week. We'll do it again next week.
You got it. See you guys.
Yep.
Richard Deitch, Sports Illustrated, author of The Media Circus. We'll be back coming up in the next hour, Tim Hasselbeck. But let's talk about the story that I brought up with Richard Deitch.
Yeah, can we back up for people that have not heard what's going on here? Because
I was going to reset it.
Let's reset this thing, because I want to know the details, because I'm ready to go off on this
guy.
Okay.
So this guy is a season ticket holder.
Is his name on there?
What? Does it matter?
Yeah. Cause let's
Who
say,
cares?
Let's name names if it's on there. This guy.
His last name is Beckman. Yeah. I don't see
this
his
guy,
first
Mr.
name.
Beckman.
Beckman.
Who told you? Beckman? Who was it? Beckman? So this guy named Beckman, I don't see his first name anywhere, so we're just going to go with Beckman. He is a season ticket holder of the Bears.
The Bears.
And the Packers, which is strange. Just to put that out there, he is a season ticket holder.
To both?
To both.
I guess they're, I mean, you can make it to. Yeah.
Yeah. He is evidently, he lives in Wisconsin. He lives in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin. He is a high school teacher. He's 56 years old. Has season tickets to both. But for the sake of this discussion, because it happened at Soldier Field and at a Bears home game, it was at a Bears-Packers game. Mm-hmm. He somehow won, I guess, you know how they do this. They reward season ticket. I mean, that's what the Predators do. I mean, you reach out to your people who are loyal to you and season ticket holders, and you do things for them. I don't know exactly how he got this, but he was able to be a part of a pregame on the field, you know, celebration, pregame warmups. He gets to go out there and be on the sidelines. Well, he has had it says in the story, he's had a PSL with the Bears at Soldier Field since 2003. So he's been at this for a long time. This is going into his, 15th year of having season tickets and having a PSL. So he was able to be a part of this on-the-field celebration, and it was around a Bears-Packer game. Well, he showed up head-to-toe, and I mean head-to-toe, in Packers swag. A jersey, beads, hat, everything. He was a big cheesehead. Big cheesehead. No, he didn't actually have a block of cheese on his head, but he was head-to-toe green and gold. Well, the Bears politely declined him going onto the field and said, look, you can't be a part of this. You can't do this, stress like this. So Beckman was not happy about it, and he is now suing the Bears. Not for financial gain. He is suing them to recoup his legal fees and to have them reverse their policy to allow anyone to dress however they want and take part in on-field experience at Soldier Field. So that is the story. That is the backdrop of Mr. Beckman and why he's suing the Bears. Your thoughts?
Well, from a legal standpoint, it's a pretty interesting thing that I guess it's just gone without saying. Why would you want to do that if you're a Packers fan? Why would you want to go on the Bears field? And every team has had to deal with this, I think, in an increasing capacity as it's become more and more common, I would say, right, to hop on a plane, go to a game in another team's stadium, or even drive there, whatever it takes. But there are tickets that are so hard to come by in your hometown. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to go on a road trip or even if you have season tickets in your hometown, sometimes you just like taking a road trip to go see your team play on the road. Darren, you and I were in Pittsburgh for the Stanley Cup final. We went and see the Met. We went to see the Mets and the Pirates. There were a lot of Mets fans that had just come down from New York to watch the weekend series. It's happening. So I think a lot of teams have to deal with, what do we do about the other team's fans? A certain amount of them we can tolerate. We'll take their money, et cetera. But when it comes to things like that, where you're talking about extra benefits, and I'll give you an example, in a club seating situation, or for the Predators, you know, the Lexus Lounge. Every arena, every stadium has something like that, where it's really privileged area for your top fans, your big spender fans. Do you want the other team's fans in there? You know, one or two, okay, but if there's a big group, like Packers fans would be for Bears fans, it's a pretty sensitive issue. You know, I'm sure if there was one Titans fan that happened to get on the field for that thing, I don't know, I'm not sure the Bears would have cared that much. But a Packers fan, that's going to rub you the wrong way. Just like a Blackhawks fan in Nashville or any other examples, an Auburn fan in the Alabama club, that's going to ruffle some feathers.
I mean, I just I would like to say to him, what did you think was really going to happen, honestly? Why do you think you have the right? It's like you always see the sign at the restaurant, right? No shoes, no shirt, no service. Well, maybe you don't like to wear shoes. Maybe it's in the summertime, it's 99 degrees, and you don't want to wear shoes. Well, that's your right not to wear shoes. It's also, to me, their right to tell you, we don't want you in our restaurant. Mm-hmm. If you don't have shoes on, you're not welcome. We're not going to give you any service. That's their right. I'm okay with that. Just like it's a team's right to say, sorry, you're not getting on the field dressed like that. You know, the Predators allow a fan. I don't know exactly how this always works. Maybe, Willie, you're more versed on this than me. I don't know if it's winning it through the auction for
Well, there's any number
of ways.
There's
ways you can get on the Zamboni during intermissions.
There's,
okay?
There's a lot of different ways.
They put fans on there. So however you came about getting a chance to be on the Zamboni during intermission, if it was a Predators-Blackhawks game, just for the sake of this discussion, and you were scheduled to be on the Zamboni during the first period intermission, and you show up downstairs head to toe in Blackhawks garb, I would think, without knowing, and I'm certainly not speaking for the Predators, but I think, I feel pretty confident, they would tell that individual, sorry, you're not going to get on the Zamboni dress like this. I realize you want it, or however you got to be a part of this, but we're not going to let you on dressed like that. That is their right. That's okay. Just like the ticket situation. It is their right to say, if you're from this area code, you're not welcome to buy tickets. It's their right. So why does this guy think he has the right to go on the field
because he's a
at Soldier Field and dressed however he wants? It's their right. Yes, you have the right to show up to the game in your season tickets dressed like that. That's your right, and they can't kick you out. But it's not your right to go on the field. It's their right to tell you, no, sorry,
but what about the
not
benefits?
Acceptable.
Okay, his argument will be, I am a season ticket holder, therefore I'm entitled to the benefits of being a season ticket holder. Tennessee fans did this for years at Vanderbilt Stadium. They would buy season tickets every
just
year to Vanderbilt games because they get to have the season ticket to the Tennessee game, and then they'll go all orange for that game.
But
they used to put the guilt trip on the Vanderbilt people. Why wouldn't you want our money? I'm buying a season ticket. I mean, half the time they're not even showing up for the games. They're just going to show up for that game. So, but it's their right because they spent the money for the season ticket. At least that's their viewpoint. So it's a little more complicated than on the surface. Because I know
think
on
that's
the surface
apples
you want to hammer
the guy. Because that's up to Vanderbilt, you know, for their fans to keep them out by buying up the tickets and saying, you know, well, we bought them all. You don't have the opportunity. We're sold out. So that's a little bit different because they had the right to block it by buying the tickets. Those tickets were available because they were just sitting there for anybody to purchase.
Tickets.
Right.
Okay, but the same is true in Chicago. There are Packers fans that live in Chicago, just like there are Bear fans that I'm sure live in Wisconsin. So if they can get season tickets.
I'm saying if they had the opportunity because they were season ticket holders to go down and be a part of something and they showed up decked out in orange, it's Vanderbilt's right. It's perfectly within their right to tell them, sorry
to get out of here. Yeah,
you're not
well,
welcome.
Well, that there should be an honor system. The fans themselves should not put the team in that position, right? On a true honor system. But this guy's going to try to push the envelope.
Yes, they should. And if you are going to be a season ticket holder, and there is a particular game that you get an opportunity as a season ticket holder, as a presumably fan of the team, and they allow you to come on the field to be with their players, I mean, why would you wear a bunch of Packer stuff? And it's the Bears.
Because you're trying to stick it to them.
No, but it's I'm inviting you to my party. I'm letting you go on the front row of my party or front row of a concert or what else. If I'm an entertainer and I give you front row seats at a concert to see me, and then you come there and you're complaining because you would rather see somebody else. Why would you do that? You see what I'm saying? You have a right to complain to see somebody else. But why would you do that? I've given you an opportunity to sit on the front row. Same with the Packers, the Bears. Yes, you bought your tickets, but my good gesture to all the ticket holders, I'm going to let y'all come on the field, you know, see the players, support the players. Why would you come in all Packer gear? Why?
I hope the Bears absolutely fight it and tell this guy to buzz off and say, we're not changing anything.
It's
to me, it's idiotic to even entertain.
It is.
That the courts should be allowed to tell an organization to reverse their policy? Give me a break.
I think every team has had this. I'm sure the Packers have had issues with Bear fans or Vikings fans over the years.
We've seen them in the city many, many times. Overrun the stadium.
But it's just like the same thing. If just because I allow you or give you the benefit or sell you something and you turn around and say, you know, we having something, I sell you a ticket, you buy the ticket, it's a charity event, you buy the ticket, you come to the charity event. If you're acting an anus, I got the right to kick you out. I don't care how much you pay for
this
ticket.
But that's the question. That's what this guy is trying to challenge, is legally, do they have that right? And I don't like that it even gets to that, because you're right. Everybody should have common sense. If you're in the other person's house, just like we've said for years, you respect that you're in the other team's house. I don't care if you're a season ticket holder or not. Understand that you are a guest. You're rooting for the other team, so act appropriately. But there are too many yo-yos that want to push the envelope, and now this guy's trying to take it to a legal.
And people, we're not saying you're a season ticket holder, you come and sit in the stands. You're a season ticket holder of the Tennessee Titans, but you come in the stands with all Jet stuff. You're in the stands. We can't see you. We don't care. But the minute you come down on the field, they invite you on the field. No, you need to take all that crap off.
No, you can't do that. Let's go to Chris. Chris, what's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I'm a season ticket holder with the Predators, and so I get all the texts and emails and everything with all the auctions that they do for the, like you said, the Zamboni earlier. But the big one is the Lexus Lounge, where they let the kids go, and you can pay $50 and let two kids fist bump, you know, the players as they come onto the ice and everything. But on all of those, the Predators, it clearly says at the bottom of those, no opposite team apparel allowed. So the Predators are very clear about their policy up front when you buy those special things.
Yeah, right. That's their right.
But they're perfectly fine. To be
with
honest,
that.
So there are people that try to slide in there,
sure,
and have the other team's jersey on. There are people that have tested that. I don't know if they've ever been thrown out. I guess it probably depends on how low key. If you stay low key, you probably get away with it. But you're right. I've seen that. I mean, they try to say, hey, if you're a guest in Lexus Lounge, you're wearing gold.
Yeah. So I think it's smart on the Predators part just to say that up front, and then you don't have to worry about it. That way, you've got the right to say, you know, when somebody does show up, you know, you can go, but you
got to
take that off.
Yeah, no, I agree. Chris,
you're
thanks
right.
for the
Thank
phone
you,
call.
Chris.
Look, this radio station has a suite in Bridgestone Arena, and clients get tickets all the time. And Willie, you know, we've experienced this because we've been at every flagship station, and we've had that suite for for 18, 19 years, okay? And we're very familiar. And sometimes, back then it was Detroit, now it's Chicago, and there's probably a couple other teams that we can identify that you give them to clients, you can't control, but they show up, right, in the decked out on the opposition. And I would be perfectly fine if somebody here said, you know what, we're all about you taking in this experience, but look, you're coming in here. Don't come in like this. You're still a guest. You're not going to come in into the suite and be dressed like that. Have a little bit of respect. I'd be okay with it. I don't think that happens, but I'm saying I would be okay with it. Like, you got invited here. Yes, you know, you got invited here because you're a client, whatever. There's a relationship. But have a little respect. I mean, you're coming into to a personal suite. Really? Decked out on the opposition stuff? I know it's not apples to apples because we're talking about more of an on-field deal or a Zamboni.
Yeah, see,
this is more like in the
but
stands.
That's where
but
the
this
discussion
is a personal box. Hey, that was the Seinfeld episode, was it not? Showing up in the personal box with the opposition's hat on?
Well, I don't think Kentucky basketball fans don't experience
it was, Darren.
Right?
Elaine had an Orioles hat on.
Yeah,
I was actually pulling the clip.
Wasn't that a sign? I mean,
right.
So that's – you don't do that. Not
Kentucky basketball fans test the boundaries of this, right? There are a lot of people that are Kentucky fans who live in Nashville that buy Vanderbilt season tickets.
But
so
that's
they can
not
go to
really
game.
A home game. That's a tournament. That's not a home game.
No, I'm talking about the game in Memorial Gym. I'm talking about buy a season ticket at Memorial Gym so that you have tickets to the Kentucky game. There are people that have done that, just like Tennessee fans or Alabama fans for football.
Yep. All right, we've struck a chord. We have loaded lines.
I want to hear about this.
We'll come back and get your phone calls. Willie, first you've got a word about Lee Company.
Well, let me tell you about Lee Company. Today will not be the story about the possum. You guys seemed to enjoy that yesterday. But there are a lot of different things that Lee Company can help you with. Let's talk about the workplace today. Because all of our workplaces, at times, especially if you're the jefe or the person in charge, sometimes you got to make the call. Hey, we need to address a maintenance issue here. And you may not have the personnel that's ready to do that for you. So you need people like Lee Company. And so if you're sitting at work right now, you know what? That's us. Right now, we got a problem with our ceilings or windows, whatever it is. We need some people. Lee Company's there to help you. 567-1000. It's as easy as that. Pick up the phone, 567-1000. Lee Company will come out, and they'll take care of that problem so you can focus on your business. Or just go online at leecompany.com. If you're listening to work, pull up your computer, leecompany.com, make an online appointment. Tell them what the problem is. They'll be out there to help you. It's all part of what Lee Company can offer you. Big sponsor of the Nashville Predators, LeeCompany.com. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Well, clearly you want to talk about this. What are your thoughts? 737-1025. Let's go to Vasily in Franklin. Vasily, what's up? What do you think?
So if we're going to talk about opposing team fans in the home team stadium, we can go look at, for precedence, we can go look at the European soccer leagues. Now, if you're wearing the other team's colors, they don't allow you in. If you start cheering for the other team, not only will the fans beat you up and force you out of the stadium, but you will be escorted out. I don't think something like that would ever fly here, as twisted as
no,
it
I don't
is
want,
over there.
I don't want that over
but,
here.
Exactly.
But are you saying they keep you? They will not let you into the stadium if you have the opposition on?
Right. Yeah. So we're Greek, and there's a rivalry in the Greek soccer league. It's called the Rivalry of Eternal Enemies. And if you're wearing the other team's colors or anything to that nature, you will not be allowed in the stadium, whether you have a ticket or not.
Wow.
And you guys should go look it up on YouTube because you'll see exactly why. They get pretty violent over there. I don't think anything like that would happen over here, but you know, you guys know what I'm saying.
Yeah, right, no, that's
I,
an extreme,
I don't want the
that's an extreme example.
Here,
but so the gray area here is, we agree that the other team's fans are allowed in the stadium. The question is, when we start getting into perks and things that are designed for benefits of the season ticket holders, the ones that are paying more, then what are the rights of the fans of the other team who are basically considered guests, right? You're considered guests when you go there.
Mark in Cottontown. Mark, what do you think?
Oh, sorry, guys. No speaker working. I worked for the Preds the first two or three years they were here and at the concession stand. And if there was a Red Wings or a Blues fan in line with their jersey on, I would let them know that there's no reason for you to be in this line. I'm not going to serve you. And as employees, we got away with it. We wouldn't serve Red Wings, Blackhawks, Blues fans.
You would not serve them at the concession stand?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, that was a policy you yourself put in, or
you implemented that?
That was just several of us that were, you know, there weren't a lot of hockey fans, but I grew up with the South Stars and you know, the Nashville Knights. So we were actually hockey fans, some of us that worked there. And you know, we knew the Red Wings, we knew the Blackhawks, we knew those fans and those teams, and we were mostly Dallas fans because that were our North Stars. That was our big league team for the South Stars.
So did you just want them to be hungry at the game? What was the motivation to not feed them?
We just didn't like them.
Oh, okay.
They weren't friendly, nice people. They weren't. You know, Red Wings fans back then, they were winning everything, and they dominated our city.
Are you saying they were a little obnoxious?
They were a lot obnoxious. Yeah. And, yeah, we went, a bunch of us, to Legends Corner down on Broad after games, and we wouldn't let them in there either.
Okay. Well, that's a little bit different extreme. Thank you, Mark, for the phone call. That was a little bit different angle. Barrett down in the borough. Barrett, what do you think?
Hey, guys. Mason invoked like a rock star or something. Do you know that for years now, Billy Joel refuses to sell the first two rows of his seats when he does a concert? Because he's so sick of rich, entitled, bored faces looking up at him. So he sends his people up to the worst, crappiest seats in the venue and has them bring down the true fans. It was a real excitement, and I think that's just incredibly awesome. But as far as this game stuff goes, the guy has a right to sue, and your first caller said it pretty much. The Predators have a little disclaimer in the fine print, and you guys giving away thousands of contests or stations run the disclaimer saying here's the rules, blah, blah, blah. But what I got when you originally read the story was that he's suing to make them change that policy. So it's unclear to me, do they have that in their fine print and he wants that changed, or simply adding it to the fine print would eliminate this kind of confusion in the future, because it seems just to be that simple.
That is a fair point, Barrett, and I would need to read a little bit further, because you're right. It just says he is suing them to reverse the policy. So
it
that doesn't mean it, we don't
it
know. Does that mean it's there already, and that's what he, or it was then he wants it put out there in black and white, you know, that you can't do it. I don't know. I'd have to look into it.
If that is the case, he's going to lose on that for sure, because they'll simply just say, look, it's our building, it's our policy, you know, sorry, good luck to you.
I would say he's going to lose no matter what.
He might get his lawyer fees, but he's not going to get them to change that policy if it does indeed exist.
Yeah, I'd have to read a little bit further to see if it's already in place or if that's what he's asking them to do to clarify. Good point. Thanks for the phone call.
Thanks, fellas.
Well, if it's already in place and he's trying to get them to change it, I don't think he wins. I don't even think he gets his large fees paid.
I would side with you on that.
Because it's in there. It says it inside.
If it's in black
of,
and
yeah,
white,
black
like
and
you
white, yeah.
cannot, you know, you have to, like you said, Willie, about the Lexus Lounge or whatever, if it says, hey, you must show up a certain way, or not show up.
Get to wear our colors. Yeah.
Then I don't see.
Like, I'm sure they would tell this guy, right, who's the Packer fan, if you want to come down on the field, you can, but you just can't wear Packers stuff. We're not telling you can't be here, even if you're secretly a Bears fan, as long as you don't come down here with your Packers stuff on. I don't think that's too much to ask, right?
I don't think so. It's interesting. We'll probably come back to this at some point and find out if anybody believes. There's probably somebody out there that thinks that, yeah, they should have let him on there. He should be allowed to do that. But we'll probably revisit this topic. We'll come back with Tim Hasselbeck, speaking of, NFL analyst for ESPN. We'll kick off the third hour with him. That's next here on 3D.